Well, I guess because they were so young, it's I don't know, like maybe it's just not their story to tell, but besides their experience, like as opposed to their parents who made the decision to make the trip. Does that make sense?
It makes sense just because everyone was so young,
Mm-hmm.
right?
True. True,
Dad,
true, true.
uncle, everyone was young. Okay, before we get into it, I have to read something special here. We have a bit of a sponsor for the second one. Quaver. Quaver is a new online platform designed for private music teachers and was designed to take the administrative, time-consuming clutter out of running a private music teaching studio. Too much of a music teacher's time is wasted chasing down payments, organizing a teaching calendar, sorry, building an online presence and finding new students. Quaver will help with all of that. On Quaver, you can automate receiving your lesson payments from your students, seamlessly organize your teaching calendar, and help yourself find new students with an easy-to-build studio webpage. Holy shit, I struggle with that one. Along with the automated lesson payments, Quaver wants to help private music teachers earn more money. Because when have you ever heard a music teacher say, "I earn too much money"? Never. Quaver will reward teachers with a 1% bonus on their total annual teaching revenue that is processed through the platform. Essentially, Quaver pays music teachers for using the platform to enhance their income. Quaver is free for teachers to use. We are passionate about building the Quaver community, providing a seamless online presence, and to enhancing the lives of music and teachers and students. I'm going to redo this later, but it takes as few as 3 minutes to set up your account and to get started, finding your students, enhancing your income. We at Quaver look forward to welcoming you into our online community. Quaver, let's make music together. So, Rolly, you're like the Swiss Army knife of creativity lately because you're an actor. You are a spoken word artist, I guess you would say. You work at night.
Yes, I do.
You work and you sing a little bit.
I'm coming around to it.
And you write rhymes.
Yes.
I've seen you do that. So,
And I run a fitness company.
and you run a fitness company. I forgot. I didn't forget about that, but maybe I did forget about that. You run a fitness company as well, so that's what, four or five things on the go.
Plug resilience fitness.
Yeah,
Your fitness needs.
there you
All
go. At the end, you'll get it. At the end,
right,
yeah.
all
So you have like five things on the go,
right.
but mainly you're an actor,
Yep.
right?
Yep.
So how did you start acting? How did you get into it? And I guess what were you doing? Maybe not what you were doing before that, but what are you doing like concurrently as well? So not only you're an actor full time, but you obviously have other jobs, right? How did you get into it?
Okay. So it started when I was a little lad, and I immigrated from UK. I was born in London, and I immigrated to America, US. So I was in Maryland when I was 4 years old. And, I was this little British kid with an accent, didn't really know how to relate to any Americans. At that time, so I took to TV, and I watched every episode of Martin, every episode of Fresh Prince, every TV show you could possibly imagine. And in a sense, I used that as a way to understand Americans, right? Because obviously, to a certain extent, that's where, the inspirations is from. So, because and then I just fell in love with the characters on TV, then certain personalities like I would emulate. And then with this combined with my natural curiosity for people, created, I think, like the secret sauce that, propelled me to want to act and to want to be in drama class, to want to be, doing plays in high school and all that stuff. For the most part, I want to say that I put the acting genes to the background. Because I was heavily into sports as well too, played football, all throughout collegiate, international. Excuse me.
Did you work at all when you were playing too?
In school, or what do you mean?
Like when you were playing for U of T,
Yeah.
okay, were you also acting as well, or were you acting after playing football?
I did start. stuff at U of T, but it was here and there, whatever. It's funny because even at school, the jack of all trades thing, I did it there too. You know, so like I literally, if I found the opportunity and it worked, absolutely, I was in it. You know, so there's a, actually, I am lying through my teeth. Yes, the answer is yes. I did plays. I did shows, and I'm sure you could find that on the dark web somewhere. Yeah, I was always in front of the camera to a certain extent.
So you're always doing something, even through football, even sort of all the way through. And then, what did you graduate with?
I graduated with a degree in political science. Yeah, for the most part, political poli sci.
Okay, and then as soon as you graduated with that. Mm-hmm. You went straight in it then?
No, not at all.
What happened before? What happened before graduating and then ending up? So basically, between graduation and the first acting job, what was happening in that time?
Okay. Okay. So as soon as I graduated, like I mentioned earlier, I played overseas. So I went over to Serbia and I was playing. I was coaching for the national team there. And then I came back and I wanted to be a firefighter, you know, so I went to firefighter school, in Texas. That was pretty amazing. I passed one part of it, but I didn't pass the other part. So I literally had to take a trip from Toronto to Texas for 30 minutes just to do a 10-minute test and come back. So that was one of those, do you really want it that bad moment? I'm like, you know what? You got it this far. You might as well do it. So then, in the interim time, I'm getting like some serious. What's it called? With the lights from the TV. What's it called? I don't know.
Like
epileptic. I don't know. So something.
I can turn it off if you want.
No, I had a strain of thought and I just felt flashes.
I can disappear that if you need to.
All right, so we got to come back a little bit to the third year university. Because in third year, there was a show called Unnatural History. It was on the Cartoon Network. And usually, some TV screens and shows and movies will use the football team. Or they'll use athletic teams to do certain scenes that are cool. Now, mind you, at this point, this was like the first time of me actually being in front of the camera. Like actual, you know, acting as I wanted to. So it was a dope experience. Like, you know, we got paid a ridiculous amount.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Were you just an extra kind of in the background?
I'm not really with special skills because we all played football.
Okay.
So they used the football team to make the scenes that they wanted. So it was an additional rate for special skills.
Oh, okay.
If you're in the acting world, you know what we're talking about. Yeah. That's where the money is. So it was just a really cool experience. So it was like extras to a certain extent because no one had any lines or whatever, but we were just in the background. So from then, I remember having a conversation with one of the coaches on the set who was also an extra, and I talked to him and I was like, how do you do this? How did you get on? And he was like, I have an agent, extra agent, da da da. This is her name. This is her number. I was enamored in that experience. I was like, you know what? I need to do this. Like, I want to be an extra because in my mind, I'm thinking, you know what? Just be an extra. You know, someone's going to fill the charisma or personality. And then, you know, bada, bada, boom, it's done. Yeah. But truly, I was like, I felt like I just needed to be around it. You know, I naturally, in my heart, I'm like, I need to just be around it. Like, I want to learn more about it because this is something, like I told you, as a kid, I've watched countless episodes and I've just enamored with that world. So I got that agent. Then for the next 3 years, so remember, this is the third year of university, third or fourth year of university. So for the next 3 years, or maybe I didn't send her a message until a year later, until I was about to graduate. Okay. So when I finally sent her a message, she told me to come to her office. It was like on St. Clair and, I don't know, DuPont, whatever, if that intersects, it doesn't, but you get
we'll
the general.
We'll say it does.
Exactly. You get the general direction. So I came in. I didn't know what to expect. But she signed me on. And it just as an extra. So then literally, like, I remember, you know, every 2 weeks or every week or every, like, month, I would have, you know, like, an assignment, you know, to go on a set and be part of an extra crew, right?
Right.
That was such a, it's a hot and cold experience. It was a hot and cold experience. It was cold because, you know, as an extra, you are literally like the bottom of the totem pole.
Yeah.
You know, like.
I was in a movie once. I was an extra.
Yeah.
What movie? I was on, I don't want to hijack your story.
No,
go ahead. Like, no, just, it was with the Trailer Park Boys.
Okay.
We'll loop around.
Nah, tell me. What happened?
So, they were filming a movie in the Sioux. Fuck, I feel like I just hijacked it.
No, this is how I got to learn about you too. Okay.
All right. Okay. Go ahead. So, they were doing a movie in the Sioux and they had an open casting call, and it was for this one scene where the jocks go up to the guys because they're at a bar, and they start doing some dumb shit and they had to sign their penis. Okay. The whole joke was like, you got to sign my cock. So there was that role. And then there was these two security guards. So I auditioned for the guy to get his cock signed.
Yeah.
And I didn't get it. I didn't get it. Actually, the guy they gave it to, I actually never saw him on MTV, but do you remember a guy named Boomer? He was like this big yoked guy. He kind of looked like John Cena a little bit. Apparently, he was on whatever. So him, obviously, because
he got the role.
He's enormous.
Yeah.
And then this other dude. So I was, they gave me this role of a security guard. So my role in the scene is that Randy, everyone knows him as Randy. Yeah. He's got this silk suit on and he's got a boner. And
you can't hide those in suits.
No, you can't. Especially like, it's like a silk onesie, like one of those morph suits, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the whole joke of the scene is like, he's got this boner. They snuck in, they hijacked the feed. And then I tackle him, and his dick comes out. That was the payoff of the joke. And during this scene, I'm telling you.
What a great first scene to be in.
I was sitting there going, so what happens? And they're like, well, he falls over, and then his dick comes out and smashes against the camera. So I was like, okay, if that's the scene, I'm not going to, whatever. But the way they had to string this guy up.
Yeah.
Because he had to actually dance, because we were on like a booth, like a box.
Yeah.
And the way he had to fall was he had to fall off the box and then get his pants caught in a flagpole or whatever the fuck. So they had a dude, a big fat guy, half naked with a prosthetic dick, dangling with a crane onto some piece of pane of glass with a group of people around it staring because they had to do it a couple times. So think of it like he had to, like, you know how when scuba divers, okay, that's the way he had to fall.
Oh.
So his dick came down and smashed the camera.
And how many takes did they
get? Oh my god, we had to stand there. We were there for like 2-3 hours.
It runs the drug drive a little bit.
Well, yeah, when you see how it's done, it's not magical.
Yeah,
it took all day to do that, but.
Yeah.
To your point of what you were saying earlier about...
the bottom of the totem pole.
Bottom of the totem pole,
yeah,
right?
Actually, yeah.
It wasn't quite... I don't think it was quite the bottom, but...
No,
it was pretty bottom. It was...
I feel like you got direction. Like, you full on had to, you know... You got camera time.
I think it was... I think I saw the bottom.
Got you.
One guy got fired for just taking a picture
of...
Of what's his name? Ricky.
Mm-hmm.
I forget his real name right now.
Mm-hmm.
So they took a picture of him and then they told him to leave and they fired him on the spot. That's like, that was because they were in the crowd because you were in a hockey
room. Yeah,
they were in the crowd. But yeah, that was pretty bottom, I would say.
Of the
acting world. Anyway, I don't know. I've only ever been in that. So you're the Budweiser commercial guy.
Hey, everyone got to start somewhere.
That's what I'm saying. Like you started. Man, that was one of those things where you see your a buddy in a Budweiser commercial. That was pretty, that was pretty interesting to see. How long did that take to do then?
In terms of the actual commercial, or what do you mean?
Just your day on set, but basically like in more in the micro, like the day-to-day on set kind of thing. How long was it?
That was a half-day shot. That was a half-day. I got there at like 8 o'clock in the morning. I was out by like 1. So the shots you see like if you remember the commercial, if you, I'm sure you can find it on the web somewhere. You know, when I look ecstatic because I'm waiting for like, you know, my team to score, they took like about an 45 minutes on each of the actors in that scene and of just getting those reactions. 45 minutes of just like, you know, you're a team. You really want them to win. You got to will them to win. This is the last shot. Da da da. So then you didn't know who they were gonna pick to for that slot. So I, at no point did I know that, you know, it was gonna end up being my reaction, and I was the one that's gonna make the final cut. You don't know.
Oh, so they just filmed a bunch of you guys doing a bunch of reactions, and then out of that they just decide.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So now after that commercial, did it start picking up?
So we got to go back a little bit. So there was a point after I did two, three years of being extra where I was like, okay, I need to be a principal. I need to move up. Like
principal, like star.
Yes.
Principal,
yes. Actor, like yeah. Having actual lines and stuff. Cause I'm like, I could just tell when I'm doing it on extra and I'm in the background, I'm not sitting in the room with everyone is. I'm just going to be on set behind the director's assistant just to be, you know, hear the lingo and whatever. So I went on a website. Well, first I took acting classes. So let's not forget that you need to your craft.
Where'd you take acting classes?
Louis Baumander and Pro Actors Lab. Pro Actors Lab was the first one.
And that's in Toronto?
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to forget the instructor. I forgot this instructor's name. He's going to hate me. But Louis Baumander was the most recent ones. And that was probably like three or four years back. What happened is then, so from those classes, I would hear the names of different agencies, you know, that represented principal actors, right? So from all the classes out here, I got a couple lists. So a couple names rang in my belt. So then what's amazing is an actual website that tells you all the respectable agents in Toronto. Okay.
Oh, so it's like a database telling you who to stay away from and who to.
Exactly. What we didn't know in this story is that I had previously been scammed by an agency called like.
What do you mean by scammed?
Scammed. Like they asked me, okay, if an agency asks you to pay $300-$500 on meeting to say, yeah, they'll take you on, that's a scam, right?
Wait. Yeah. So they invited you in for a meeting.
Yes.
And then they said, you have to pay us for this meeting?
No, they say you have to pay you to get pictures taken, you know, and the pictures taken plus the comp cards and all that stuff is going to be about $600-$700, right? And it's one of those things where, like, a respectable agency, you need pictures to even get in the office with them. Or if you come in on a cold read, they'll see you and they will tell you you need to get pictures. They don't have it. In-house photographer or one-stop shop that's going to do everything for you, right? Right, and then so most likely to get into a meeting, you would have to either send like headshots via in their email, website, or whatever. Like they're going to have to get something from you. But if you're, you know, an amazing George Clooney and you just come in and like, oh my gosh, I love your look, they're gonna tell you you need to get shots, and they'll give you recommendations, but they won't sit there and say like, this is what, like, you have to do it from this guy. And this time you're going to pay us for it.
Holy. Okay. So how far into it did you know this was a scam then?
I believe it was about like 5 or 6 months and I didn't hear anything.
Oh, so you signed up or you went with their agency and then for 6 months, no jobs happened.
Nothing. I didn't even get a call.
Holy shit.
Right.
6 months?
Yep.
Why'd you wait so long?
Oh, that's a good question. Because now, mind you, I'm still jack of all trades. But at the same time, at that point, I don't know the information. Because that information about the pictures wasn't readily available in 2012 or like or whenever I did that. Where are we at in the story right now?
We're kind of everywhere.
Gotcha.
We're a little bit everywhere. Okay. You got scammed by.
Yes.
Got scammed by that company.
Okay.
Took you 6 months to figure out that, holy shit, something's wrong.
Mm.
Still doing your thing, doing other stuff.
Mm.
When did you decide, dude, this company sucks.
Okay.
I need to eject.
So, like I said, about 6 months in, I realized, okay, this is whack. But now, it was, okay, the reason we went back to that story was because when I was doing acting classes, and I found out about the actual website, it would tell you who are the respectable agencies. So when I was looking on the list, obviously I didn't see the agent that that scammed me. Right. So I knew it was a scam. That's when I knew it was a scam after the fact, right? So I just never re-signed or never went back in, because I think that a year later they moved offices. So that was the first clue that it was kind of fake,
right?
Because it was like they full on changed management and all that stuff. So fast forward to me doing acting classes, and I'm hearing the names of different agents and this, that, and third. And I go on the website. So as I'm going on the website, I literally try to see every agency's name that I heard in the acting class. So I could tell, you know, which one I heard in the acting class. Then I had a friend of mine just take some pictures of me. Literally, just, and you know who that friend was?
Who's that friend?
Brogan McNabb.
Oh man, we have to
plug Brogues.
Yeah, we have to go back. Yeah, that's in the modern era.
Yeah,
we're talking Rolly, starting from the absolute bottom here.
Bottom.
Feeder. But we'll get to that.
Yeah,
we'll get to that.
So I got some pictures taken, you know, and then for all the agencies. So literally, I sat at home and I literally like sent an email out to like 35-40. And agencies with my headshot, and then that was it. I didn't really have that much of a resume. I had some, you know, stuff from Mandy website or some stuff from Kijiji at the time, which is hella sketchy, to be honest with you. But you know, and maybe some high school stuff or whatever. Absolutely, man. You'd be surprised what starving artists' length we go to.
Holy shit! Wow, Kijiji.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. trust me, after we turn, you know, the story off, there's some other stories that came from Kijiji that was a little sketch.
Wow. Okay.
But so where were we at? So, I got these pictures taken, and I sent the email out to like a bunch of these agencies. I got responses from like four or five, you know, actual responses saying, you know, yeah, we like your look, come in, blah, blah, blah. You know, so from all that, from those four to five, you know, I decided to go with the agency that I'm with now, Newton Landry. This is the beginning of the actual.
So now, acting. Okay. So now you're in a good company, had good representation, you know, now you're at the doorstep of now you're starting to actually act.
Yes, or get the opportunity to, even being in the room for audition to act.
Yeah.
So the first year, I believe, was it 2017 or 16, one of these years? For the first 6-7 months. No, it must have been 2016. For the first seven, 8 months, I auditioned like a madman. Like I auditioned 3-4 a week, 3-4, really? 5 a week. Like, I just wasn't getting anything.
What were the roles, though? Like, what were the roles?
Commercials, you know, armed guard, you know, really one-liners. You know, wasn't, because at the end of the day, it's like, to even get in the room is tough. Because if someone who doesn't have a resume to it, you kind of have to, take the smaller roles to build up a resume so your agent can argue for you to get you an audition.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense, though.
Yeah.
Right.
So I did all of those auditions. And then there was a point, you know, 7 months in after, you know, I did all countless auditions. There was a point 7 months in where I was like, you know what? Fuck it. All right. I'm just going to be me. That's it. What was happening was like when I was going into the auditions, I was trying to perform. You know, like I was trying to act whatever that means.
Yeah, you were trying to act.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
Okay. You're telling me acting wasn't working?
Yeah, it doesn't. It's not. Yeah. It's such a double entendre. It doesn't work. You cannot act.
That's a good
point. You have to be an actor.
That's a good point to make.
Yeah.
You can't go in and act.
No. They're going to spot that a mile away. And you're going to be like the 100 people that go in and act. Right? So that was a little gem.
You have to be.
You have to be. It has to be. It has to. They have to see. You have to show yourself in that role, as opposed to trying to be that role.
Right.
You have to show yourself, because that's the authenticity. And that's what you can believe. But if you see someone coming to audition and they're acting forward, like or whatever, like
method. That's method, right?
Exactly. But when you're doing that, like they can tell. And that's the part where it's like there's a lag, you know. So, for example, the eyes catch everything, you know? So if you're trying to convince yourself to be in a state of mind, your eyes will give it away. You're not in that state of mind. So like 7 months in, like I said, I decided I don't care. Like, I'm not going to keep trying. I'm just, you know, if they like me, they like me.
Going in more genuine then.
Yeah. Or for me, I was like, whatever I've been trying to do ain't working. I might as well just be me. And if it's too eccentric, if it's too whatever, then oh well. At least like I know that I'm being authentic to myself. When I decided that, boom, I freaking land the Budweiser commercial. It was literally like the second or third audition after I made that switch. So that was wild.
So it happened pretty fast then.
Yeah. In terms of when I decided the change, that's when the auditions just went different. When I wasn't sitting there hoping that, you know, it was going to be like I was going to get it. When I wasn't sitting there like you know what, going into the audition room and be like, you know what, he's probably like a better, he probably fits the part better. He probably like actors, you get really cerebral, because I just felt like because I had a better mindset about it that you could tell. I know what I got. And it's if you feel it and if you like it, then cool. If you don't, that's cool too. I still got it. Like, I'm not going to, you know, like, I'm not. So when I started to do that, you know, the Budweiser thing came in. And now, mind you, it didn't come out until, it was the playoff season.
Last for year, like, hockey? Yeah, for yes. Hockey playoffs?
Exactly. So it was playing like
it was
crazy.
It was the Bud Cups with the light, mm-hmm. with the light underneath. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Right, right. And that happened. Okay, so that was for the playoffs last year. So, fuck, dude, a ton of people probably saw that.
I got friends calling me from Calgary. I had friends calling me from Ohio, like, full on. Friends calling me from UK.
Yeah.
They saw the commercial. So
and they ran
cool.
those during the Leaf games.
Yeah.
And, man, you probably got seen by a good portion of the country.
That's amazing, yeah. I never even thought about that, but that's... That's amazing.
I mean, yeah, like just to think if it's playing, especially last year too with the Leafs
actually
doing
good. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, doing yeah, well. Yeah, everyone's yeah. watching, and then playoffs roll around, and then your
yeah,
commercials, yeah, the yeah. Bud, like the Bud commercial.
That was, yeah, and
you know what I mean? Like a lot of people have seen your face somewhere. Have you gotten that yet?
Yes, but it's usually like the people who have association to me like that will either like say it, whatever, right?
When you go to auditions, do they know? Or do they say, hey, oh, I've seen your face, like, or is it something that's known within?
I'm trying to remember. I personally haven't got it, but I felt the difference of that.
Fair enough. Okay.
You know, so then from then, now, mind you, I could say it was because of my mentality shift, but I did felt like, you know, I was starting to get more success. Right. You know, because there was...
You manifested it.
Yes, I manifested it. But at the same time, in my mind, I'm like, because I actually, you know, got a spot and people might have seen it, now my face is becoming something people realize they, you know, they want to see.
Right.
Right. So that's right, part yeah. of that's part of it.
Ah, that's super interesting, man.
I'm grabbing another.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Rolly just has to get up and grab another Summersbee.
Hello.
Got to stay hydrated. Stay hydrated. Speaking of hydration, resilience.
Woo!
Second, good segue. That was a good segue. Second podcast ever. Decent segue. Okay. Resilience is Resilience is your fitness company as well.
Yes.
Is it owned by the? So it's you, Andrew, and
Josh. Who came up with the idea? We would probably say. That it was Josh that came up with the idea of training groups. He was working at Ryerson, I believe, and he was talking to Andrew, who was working at Old City Hall for Rob Ford at the time. Rest in peace. And I believe Josh was like, you know, yeah, we have to start. Let's start group training, because he's probably seen it online or with friends. Da da da. And then Andrew said, if we do this, we have to do it with Rolly. Josh, me and Josh don't really know each other that well. So that was a matter of like, okay, let's all meet. Let's have the idea. What are we doing? At the time, I believe I was coaching at York. That was 2014.
2014.
Yeah, yeah. So I was coaching at York. And then around that season, I ended up getting a job at Good Life Fitness. Eventually, I brought them on. We started running, you know, group classes out of Good Life, and then realized, okay, this isn't really, you know, the flex. And then an opportunity opened up where a friend we knew from college was managing that facility that we were at on the east side. And that's how, you know, that kind of happened.
Yeah, because you guys have grown massively. How long have you guys been in existence for?
2015 February.
So 2015 February, and in 3 years you were able to. You have three locations now, or two locations?
Two. The third one's coming.
Third one's coming, and that one's going to be where?
In Mississauga.
Oh wow! So you guys are now expanding out of the city.
Yeah.
For in 3 years too.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Well, I'll say something. I have grown the most personally, in my personal life. Because of this company, because, you know, it's you have to work with the differences you have with people, as opposed to if you're at a job where, you know, let's say you and someone from a different department doesn't get along, then, you know, you're just not going to see them or whatever. But like, no, you have to work with the differences, find out your strengths, find out your weaknesses, and work with it.
Yeah, because you guys make a really good team then. Mm-hmm. How many other companies like you are there here?
It's definitely grown over the last year, but I can only name about five.
Five other ones?
Yeah, yeah.
You guys are doing similar to football workouts.
Exactly.
Like you guys are doing Prowler shit. Like that shit's now big. That's big now, all that kind of stuff. Like the functional fitness thing.
Exactly. Athletic training. Functional fitness, that's, you know, at the end of the day, people just can learn how to move better. And but then the more, like, the catalyst of resilience fitness is the community and the family, and just knowing that like there's love inside it. Like, seriously, like, you can create a family. Right now, this family is, it's the function of it is, you know, to live a better life, to be more fit, right? But then, like, the growth and the community that happens, like, within it is dope. It's really inspiring.
Yeah, it's like a team. It's like a team thing.
Absolutely. And then you know that, you know, like playing ball. That's, you know, grows
that's,
us.
Yeah, that's a – dude, I was doing Muay Thai for a bit. Mm-hmm. And that was that same sort of thing. You know what I mean? Like everyone in there is strangers. No one knows each other. And it was kind of dope because then at the end it was – you were just – that was probably the worst or hardest workout I've ever had to do. And then everyone's just – kind of into it after.
Yeah, yeah. It's like an air, like it's like a energy that's just exists in a room when you go through something together.
It was cool. So not only, okay, so you, I mean, you told the actor story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're also a wordsmith, in some senses, and you've written songs for people.
Yes. plug.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Plug comes. So the album 19 by Nick Nikon just dropped yesterday. So it's on available on all streaming platforms. I wrote a good portion of that album. So it was a really dope experience to actually see it come to life.
Who's Nick Nikon?
Nick Nikon, he's a producer out of Toronto. He's based in Los Angeles right now. He got a lot of notoriety from being a producer in 2013, 14. Then he started to transition himself into being an artist. And yeah, if you don't mind, Mike, I just want to tell everyone who's listening, who will be listening to this, is like, this was not an easy road, guys. This was not an easy road in everything, in every possible success that, you know, like we speak above now, there was 10, 20 failures within that same realm. So, just put it in perspective, like, you know, because I know
we talked about the good,
yeah,
right. Oh, we talked about like, you gave the whole story about the good part of all this, right? With the one ripoff, you got ripped off once, you know, chalk it up to learning. But you've told the good shit, right? Obviously. The starving artist part of this.
Yeah.
Can't all be good.
Yeah.
Obviously not. Mm-hmm. So obviously, sorry. Obviously there's the setbacks that have happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I've had, you know, tons in my time, and I'm still just starting out, right?
Yeah.
But I guess what were the one or two or three kind of setbacks that kind of happened to you along the way? And then how did you get over that?
Whew, about to get real.
Yeah.
So I used to work security at the Brunswick House, which is no longer an establishment, thank goodness. So I was doing security, and then there was a night when a guy was getting kicked out. He was yelling obscenities, this, that, and a third. And, you know, so he got escorted out, and me, I was working the front door, and I approached him like, what's going on, to calm him down. He takes a swing at me. I duck the swing, and then a bunch of guys that I knew who had just walked in, they saw that, and they just handle this kid and try to teach him a lesson. And then, you know, so then, long story short, I believe, like, his jaw got broken. I'm not really sure. But then, you know, his mom is, like, telling the police that, you know, we got to do something about this, that. So then I ended up getting charged.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, yeah. It was, the funniest thing was that, like, it was almost like a joke that, like, yeah, I didn't even, like put a hand on him. But,
yeah.
So I ended up getting charged. And
you got charged with assault?
Yep.
Oh, man.
I think aggravated assault.
How
or just
long
assault.
Ago was this?
This was 2013. Was the incident, I found out, 2014 February.
And you were still in school?
No. I graduated in 2012.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I graduated in 2012.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So now, mind you, if you're remembering the story, 14th is when I eventually go to firefighter school.
Right.
And so I found out about this. I'm distraught because, you know, now I have to go through this process. And now, so at first, what was okay was that, like, I had a good relationship with the owner, and he saw the tapes, and he saw I didn't put my hand on him, and they knew who I am as a person. So they knew, like, all right, this is not somebody who's going to aggressively try to, like, do anything, like, dumb to the person. The owner was paying for the lawyer fees at the time, because obviously it's in line with the company's best interest. That lasted about 8 months till they realized he's like, I don't want to feel like paying this thing anymore. So then after I went I went to go plant trees in the summer of 2014, came back, I found out I didn't have a job anymore. So because I didn't have a job anymore, he didn't have to pay anymore. So then that was stressful on me, because then I had to, like, figure out how I'm gonna pay for, you know, these meetings.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, was tough. It was tough to go through that and then still try to, like, you know, like, live, like, in, like life, be happy, even though, you know, in that situation, it's like, I know I didn't put my hands on a man, like,
sure,
at all.
Yeah.
Right?
And it got pinned on you.
Yeah, it got pinned on me, and then we went from, like, trial to trial, not trial, but we went from the Crown and my lawyer would have to meet, you know, periodically.
Okay.
Then there will be court dates, yes. But it's not an actual trial. It's just, like, court dates to figure out, okay, what are we going to do now for the next one? And all of that was stressful. So then eventually, so December of 2014, I believe, was when we were supposed to go, to trial, right? So at this point, I had all my witnesses, da-da-da-da. The Crown was like, I didn't know there were witnesses. So this was just part of, like, the story that, like, okay, there's so many holes in this story, but no one obviously was trying to hear it. And I'm sure there was someone really pushing for something to be done about it.
Did they have anyone else, or was it just you? Like, was there anyone else that was suspected, or did they just say, no, this guy did it 100%?
So in his story, the guy said, you know, there was a guy with tats. The guy had tattoos, and the guy's light skin, and the guy, like, has dreads. Like, and that was what was describing me. I'm not light skin. I don't think I am. Didn't have dreads at the time. And I still don't have a tattoo. So it, like, that was part of. So then also there was another guy that was being sued civilly, and because he literally the guy literally just found a picture on Facebook and was like, I think it was him.
Oh,
so
wow.
A random guy,
okay, yeah,
literally was getting sued civilly for something he wasn't present that night.
Sure, yeah.
So, long story short, 2015, I believe, 2015 around like May, it was withdrawn from the Crown, because obviously they didn't see, like, a reasonable chance of success, and but just that was really. it was tough because at this point, remember, 2015, I started Resilience in 2015, right? So then it's like I'm like running a fitness company. And then at this point, there's a guy coming in to try to serve me.
Sure, yeah.
At, you know,
at your gym, at your startup.
Yeah, and I'm like.
And you're the CEO. And yes. Someone's trying to come serve you papers for some nonsense.
And for the most part, like, you know, what was like 25 at the point, 26?
The optics of that doesn't look good.
It doesn't at all. And then I was aware of that. And then one of the things, like I was saying about the personal growth, was that I had to keep that personal stuff away from what was going on in the business. And that was tough because it was like, yes, I know what's going on is stressful, but you can't bring that here because that's not what this energy is.
Yeah, man. If you have, especially to a startup, man, you can't. Yeah. So you had lawsuit.
Yeah.
Business.
Yeah.
Acting.
Yeah.
Holy shit. How did you juggle all of that?
God. Well, God. Yeah, that's that'd be my answer for that one.
Like, that's a lot on your plate, man.
Yeah. So.
Did any of it affect each other?
Of course.
In what ways?
You know, I was definitely emotional during that time. And I was probably even more so emotional to my partners because I was almost like, you know what I'm going through. It's like, how can you then tell me like to try to keep that stuff away? And then, like, because I couldn't understand how to deal with that in itself, right? Because I'm like, this is stressful. This is life. This is what's ailing me. But yeah, you're like, you know what? I get it. But you got kind of got to keep a separation from the business. You know, you can't. And I'm like, and it was a hard pill to swallow. But it was something that, you know, I saw the benefit of it eventually. And it was something that, like, you know, I respected their position, you know, enough to say that. And it was something that, you know, it needed to be done.
When did it come to an end and then it sort of be on its merry way, like be on its way to where you are now?
Now, okay, so remember, I went to firefighter college, right? The reason I did not pursue that employment or that path was because during that time, I was being charged.
Oh, so it prevented you from continuing on in firefighter school then?
Yeah, yeah.
Holy shit, man.
Yeah. I knew I had to at least like wait until that was dropped because then it's like as soon as you try to do that, they're gonna ask about it and it doesn't look good.
Totally.
Opportunity for it, yeah.
Now about that time, that's when Budweiser commercial hit.
Yes, 2016. That was the year after.
Okay.
Yeah, because it was dropped in 2015, if I remember correctly. Resilience started. Yeah, January 2015 is when I went to get an agent.
Yeah.
I auditioned for all that year. And Budweiser was November 2016.
Damn. So there's like there, the struggles. I mean, the struggle sucks.
Yeah. Well, okay. So this is a caveat that I feel like a lot of people will relate to.
Yeah.
2015, I also broke up with, you know, my longtime girlfriend.
Oh, sure, yeah. The heartbreak, man.
And that was the heartbreak of all heartbreaks. Yeah.
You'd be surprised how much that could fuck with the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Especially when you're already kind of in this grinder, mm-hmm. and then that kind of hits. Mm. Yeah, man.
You know, when you're home alone, those thoughts get wild. But what I do acknowledge is that that breakup propelled a lot of like my drive in resilience.
Sure, yeah.
Because it was one that's like, you know what? No, I'm not gonna be a failure, or I'm not, you know, like I'm not gonna. If I end up not coming back from this, if I end up not, you know,
right,
making
yeah.
a turnaround, then yeah. you know, I'm glad you left me.
Yeah, totally. Right.
So that was one of those things where it's like it definitely fueled a lot of fire out of that.
So what's next? What's going on with other projects? Like what's on the agenda? What have you? You auditioned a couple weeks ago when you were here.
Yeah.
For something. What's going on?
I did, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. This is going to sound amazing.
Like, yeah. What's going on with that?
So I auditioned for three. I had three auditions that week.
Yeah, you had a lot that week. That was a right? big week for you.
Yeah. I got all three.
No way. What did you get?
Okay.
Because you never ended up telling me what you were auditioning for.
Oh, so See No Evil. It's a TV show. Paranormal 911 is a TV doc.
Yeah.
And I believe Forbidding is another TV doc. And I ended up having to my agent ended up having to cancel the other two. Mm-hmm. So I could do Forbidden because it was the longest and in terms of more days on set and it was, a bigger role.
You had to turn down work for more work.
Yeah.
That's a pretty dope problem to have.
Especially
as an actor on your way.
Yeah. So that was.
Damn.
But you kind of know. I kind of know because when I did the audition, I was surprised at myself. I was like, okay, I wasn't going into the audition planning on crying.
You went in full go, full emotion.
Yeah.
And ended up working out.
So I shoot next Friday for Forbidden.
Oh.
And it was about 5 days on set, I believe.
So that's that. I mean, you're acting now.
Yeah.
But you also told me out here, you also bartend at night.
Yes.
At an establishment.
I do.
Called?
The Fifth Social Club. Or Easy on the Fifth.
So I actually maybe met you like maybe 5-6 years ago, and just didn't know it then.
No. I started in 2013.
Oh, okay. You know what? That might have been around the same time then.
Yo, you probably was. Sorry.
I think I know 2013 because what ended up happening was. I was shooting there, I think every Thursday, but I wasn't on the what's it called? The Easy on the Fifth side.
Yeah.
I was on the Cabin Five side.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they had the Thursday events.
Gotcha.
So I would shoot there Thursday.
Yeah.
And, I think Thursday and Saturday. And that's where I met
Brogan.
She was bartending there. And I would shoot there we would shoot there every week, which was that was a while ago. That was back in the club shooting days.
Wow,
super long ago. But yeah,
you came up.
Well, it's been it's been a journey.
Good,
that's for sure.
Yeah,
it's been it's been nutty. And then so, let's talk about football a little bit.
Yeah,
you played at U of T.
Yep.
Okay, where were you, DB?
I started as a DB, then I went to linebacker, and then I ended up as a receiver for the last 2 years. Yeah.
How many touchdowns?
That's another story. But
is that a whole other podcast?
That's a whole other podcast.
Is there that many touchdowns, Rolly?
No, but there was that much controversy.
Oh,
within that season.
Whoa.
Yeah, but I ended up with one. I didn't play. Seven games of my out of the last 14 games, in terms of the last two seasons, I probably played 4 games.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Why though?
So one, there was an injury, and then the athletic director just pulled the string on my season based on the injury.
Okay.
It's on YouTube. It's pretty dope.
What happened?
I went up for a pass, the DB. Now, this is in the age of my CIS doesn't give a crap about receivers and getting hurts and concussions and all that stuff. But I went up for a pass. I caught the ball. As I'm going in the air, the DB at Queens, he takes my legs out. So I hit the ground head first in the air, and then I full on freeze, all that stuff. And then we went to the hospital. They thought I broke my neck. Didn't break my neck. I was born with something in my neck. And then they was like, nah, just shut it down. The season before, I got into an altercation with a girl, that was definitely wasn't, the optics of it wasn't well. Mm-hmm. So then the athletic director at the time was like, we're just gonna we're gonna cut ties just to say we done our job. So the situation more or less with a girl that I was seeing at the time wanted a little more attention than I was willing to give her. And then when I kind of cut it off, she couldn't really handle that situation. Yeah. And then Police got involved, and it was one of those. Yeah.
Oh, what, the police got into it?
Yep.
Jesus, dude. Yep.
So that was the other thing, the other like low points of like, okay, what's going to happen? Like what are you really doing?
So to wrap it up here, Rolly, what's your message out there? What's your message for everybody? All the actors, all the aspiring actors, actresses who are on the path, who are just either starting out or they're in it or they need some, you know, some insight from someone who's on the path too. What do you have to say to everyone that might be listening? Mm-hmm.
Be prepared to fail. And if you want it bad enough, be prepared to use that failure as a stepping stone. So know the failure is going to come, but also know you're not going to stay in that mindset, or don't allow yourself to stay in that mindset for too long and like grow from that failure. And that sounds really, you know, like cliche, but that's the truth. Like, that's really where it comes from. You can't, you know, if you want it, if you want anything bad enough, you're going to get it. If you want it bad enough, you will find a way to make it work. So especially in TV and acting, there's a lot of stuff that's not in your control. You know, you can be perfect for the role, but the person sitting on the other side of the table didn't like your shirt or didn't like how you walked in. You can't control that, and you can't let that affect you. You can't let that affect how confidently you walk in the next room, right? So continue to first of all, know yourself, continue to explore yourself, and be unapologetically you, because that is what people are either going to like or they're not going to like. But you shouldn't change it based on what someone likes, because then you're not being you. You don't know who you are.
Fair enough. Some good wisdom there.
Thank you, man.
All right. Rolly, everyone.
Great timing.
All right.
We're going to hear your story, by the way, before you click off. Don't forget. Oh. I'm going to switch the script on you, too. Yes, we will. No, I'm saying we're going to do another interview.
Oh, yeah,
I
got to
work
yeah.
soon.
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to do. I mean, this is like this is number two, right?
Yeah.
So I freaked myself out because I was watching podcasts before this.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, damn, they're all so fucking good.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's good and snappy and this and that. And I'm like, damn. And then you got here and I kind of got nervous.
Why?
Nervous as in like, man, I want it to be good.
Yeah, it will.
But that's the thing about like trying to do something. Like my first video was goddamn the fucking worst thing.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my God. Right? The first video I ever made was embarrassingly terrible.
Yeah.
And it's just, I think at the time, I didn't know anyone doing it.
Yeah.
So just, I thought, okay, this is good, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know what the fuck is good.
Yeah.
There's no competition.
Yeah.
So you do it, and then with video, after just doing this for like 10 minutes, and maybe this is I'm going to put this into, because this is like real now.
Yeah.
Like, with video, you can hide.
Mm-hmm,
you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, you can hide, and you can put something out, whatever it is, if it's weird. I put a video last year, or 2 years ago, when my dog died.
Yeah.
So it's not usually stuff I do. Yeah. But I put one out, but it's you're hiding. No one sees your fate. No one, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
With a podcast, it's like this, it's happening in real time.
Yeah.
And it's your thoughts, and it's what you think, and it's your thought process. And it's sort of like, it freaks you out a little bit if you haven't done it enough.
Yeah.
So this
I know what you mean.
You know what I mean, though?
Yeah.
Like, I walk in, and I'm in halfway, like midway through, I'm like, oh, this is kind of robotic.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, what am I trying to get across here? What am I doing?
And so now after like the hour, 20 minutes,
that's what I mean. After the hour, 20 minutes, I feel like after that, I just fake ended it. I feel so much more relaxed just because now I'm talking about something.
Yeah. What you were talking about something the whole time.
No, totally. Yeah. But I was trying to robotically bring up something relatable.
Got you.
You're trying.
Yeah.
And that's what's weird about this.
Yeah.
Because with videos, it's just you can make it and you can hide behind it.
Got you.
If it's good, if it's bad, whatever. No one sees you or your
your
being. But with this, it's like this is real time voice and talk.
Yeah, and it's
a different dynamic.
Well, I will say that, like, you know, the questions you had were very prompting. The questions you had, like, definitely, like, you know,
It's a conversation.
Yeah.
And it's tough to, like, I didn't realize how hard it was to get a conversation rolling about something in particular, right?
Yeah. Yo, so. I guarantee you, like, oh, I'm so happy right now because I'm like, this is like the first of like 100 and a bunch.
I hope, like, that's what I mean. I hope so.
Yeah.
And I hope it turns into that. I hope it turns into like a, you know, like a like stone rolling down the hill kind of thing, right? Because this one, really, the one before this was just my parent, like my family.
So, yeah.
And I just put a mic down. I don't even think the mic plugged in. I was looking at the track, like one mic fucked up and it stopped working.
Yeah.
So I have one track, one mic, and that was the first one. It wasn't even questions. It was just you lob something out and then eight people would talk.
Yeah.
With one-on-one, it's a little more difficult because if you're not used to doing it, it's just going to come out as just you're asking questions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And really you want like this.
A discourse, absolutely.
This is more of a conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
So it took fucking an hour and 17 minutes.
We got to it.
To get to like discourse.
I understand what you're talking about because at the end of the day, you have to like, you know, prompt or you have to have like a direction because at the end of the day, it's like two people just talking about
nonsense.
Whatever,
yeah.
That's not, you know, going anywhere. But it's like when you have like an agenda. Okay, it was okay. Well, what lesson do you want someone to learn from, or what can you like? Even like the last question of what's something you want to tell to the young people. That in itself can be a whole podcast.
Sure,
right? Because we can just go back and forth on that.
Yeah,
right.
But I'm not even sure if I don't even know if I want this podcast to be rah rah.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want it to be like listening inspiring to like.
Or,
I don't want it to be like listening to a Gary Vee video.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's not really what I want. But I think because I was just asking questions, it sort of just kind of went to that.
Yeah.
But I want this to evolve into just like just talking the shit about doing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was an interesting experience.
This is dope. This is amazing. This is my first podcast experience myself.
Mine too.
So I'm happy this is with you.
This is my first one. And it's nerve wracking. But it's funny at the same time.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yo, just make sure you guys request to get me back, all right? Because I want to make sure, Mike, you guys got something special with Mike, all right? Trust me, you have something special, Mike. I'm not trying to toot his horn right now. It's like when you see people that are movers and shakers, like they're literally, like, I remember we met at York. I was coaching there. He was doing a bunch of the shots there. And just what he was doing, I automatically saw him like, okay, this is the guy. Like, he has a vision that is like 10 years from anything that's happening currently. Right. So that was something I was like, yo, I got to stay close to this guy. Like, period. So you guys got somebody special, man.
That's awfully nice. That's awfully nice.
I'm awfully late, too.
Yeah. Okay. That's Rolly. Mm-hmm. That's episode 2, Starving Artist Podcast. Hope you guys liked it.
Cheers.